All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. All who have business before this court draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Well, good morning. I'm Judge Allen, and to my right is Judge Peach, and to my left is Judge Jakewith. And before we get going this morning, we want to thank the National, we want to thank NOVA for inviting us to be here. We were here a couple of years ago, and we always enjoy speaking to or getting a chance to interact with all of you, and so we really appreciate it today. We are here convened to consider arguments in the matter of Charles G. Reynolds versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 23-6336. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, state your appearance for the record?
Good morning, Your Honors. Scott Schulman with Brian Anderson from Bergman & Moore for appellate Charles Reynolds.
Thank you. Secretary's counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Angelica Banks alongside Ronan Morris for the appellee, Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Thanks. Nice to see you. Now, I understand that appellant wants to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. Is that right, Mr. Schulman? Okay, we'll make that happen, and you can begin when you're ready.
Okay. May it please the court, the case before you today is about whether the board clearly erred in finding that appellant's hearing loss claim was not granted all or in part due to newly associated service department records that had not been previously associated with the claims file. Today, I will focus on the burden under 3.156C3 for a claim to be granted in part based on the newly associated records, and then discuss how the board failed in meeting that standard. Just before I kind of begin on all that, I did just want to note that the purpose of 3.156C generally is to ensure veterans such as Mr. Reynolds are not punished and not harmed by VA's failure to associate service records that existed but had not been associated with the record. In this case, the service records show Mr. Reynolds engaged in combat twice under heavy fire, where he performed, acts of bravery, where he ran through hostile fire to direct his troops, and where he took over with his squad leader had been injured in fire and prevented further casualties. So the key question here is what it means for these claims to be granted in part due to these newly associated records. And to begin, the very language of C3 suggests this is a low standard. It only needs to be in part. It does not need to be the only factor. It does not have to be the primary factor. It does not have to be anything more than part of what led to the grant of service connection for the hearing loss.
So can I make sure we're on the same page about one thing. So you agree, though, that the records must be something more than just the reason that the claim is re-adjudicated?
Yes, Your Honor. I do agree that they need to be more than solely the reason the case was reconsidered or re-adjudicated. I would say I think the key in these cases is you essentially look at a causal chain, whether the newly associated records are what prompted development. And as long as nothing breaks that chain, as long as those records are relevant and speak to the basis for service connection, in those instances, I think C3 applies. And I think that applies in this case.
So let's just assume for a second, jumping to the end of the argument here. Let's assume that we agree with you on what you just said. Mm-hmm. My reading of the board's decision is the board took thinking of this like a spectrum. On the one hand, we know that C1 and C3 are separate, so it's got to be more than just you qualify for an earlier effective date under C3 because the records were sufficient under C1. You've already agreed to that. It's got to be something more than that. On the other spectrum, it seemed like what the board was saying, at least colloquially, was, well, if we don't point to those records when we grant you the benefit, then it doesn't qualify under C3. So there's sort of these two things, right? And then in the middle, you have what you described, but my words, not yours, the link in the chain idea, right? The board, though, took a categorical, it seems to me, position, sort of the, this wasn't the reason we granted. So if that's right, and we still agree with you, wouldn't we still need to send this back?
So it's certainly possible, Your Honor, if, you know, you think that there's, you know, facts that are in question here, that, you know, a reasons or bases remand to have the board address it under the correct standard in the first instance would be appropriate. Generally, I think here, you know, there's really no disputes to the facts of the case, which is the only new relevant evidence added between the 1991 denial and the reconsideration were these, you know, service records showing the award of these medals. That was the only thing that could have led to the case being reconsidered, and I don't think there's any dispute to that. That, in turn, directly led to the VA examination. That, in turn, led to an RO decision that, you know, found the case was reconsidered and granted based on, in part, on service noise exposure due to combat, which was evidenced by those records. So I think because there's no dispute to any of those facts that, you know, it certainly could be reversed on clear error, but, you know, if a finding of fact needs to be made, then, you know, I do agree that it would need to go back, Your Honor.
So in the words of the Federal Circuit, was this, is it your view that this is, quote, beyond debate?
That is my view, Your Honor, yes.
So you would prefer, obviously you'd prefer, but your main point is you want us to reverse and order an earlier effective date. But your backup position is to remand for the board to apply what you see as the correct.
That's correct, Your Honor. And then, so kind of getting back to where I was. So, you know, I think we know.
If we were the effective date earlier, what would be the effective date?
So that would go back to his original application in 1990, Your Honor.
But there was no, the medical evidence showed no service connection, no hearing loss on a permanent basis. It was acute, apparently.
So in the initial decision, there was a VA exam in the first one, but no opinion from the VA examiner. But hearing loss was found as a disability. The regional office there denied based on no in-service injury.
It was a hearing loss finding by VA, not an in-service finding.
That's right.
There's no in-service medical finding of a hearing injury.
That's right, Your Honor. And so the first step is, you know, we know that a causal chain is at least part of the analysis under C3. We know this from cases such as Stowers v. Shinseki, George v. Shulkin, Vigil EP, Blue Bob v. McDonald, all discuss that when the new records lead to a grant, that, you know, C3 can come into play and be considered. You know, Stower specifically looks at instances where VA examinations stem from the initial service records that had been associated with the record. In Vigil, the court looked at the secretary's own interpretation in the Federal Register when, you know, this rule was proposed initially to be amended in 2005, where they specifically give an example of a claim that had been denied based on a lack of evidence of an in-service injury. Then after that evidence was received, you know, further development took place, a new exam was ordered, and then service connection eventually granted. You know, the court adopted the VA's example there as an instance that even though the exam itself, you know, isn't new service records under C3 that could support, you know, a grant under C3. So, you know, we know there is a causal chain element of some kind due to the case law that's developed here.
So assume, as I like to say sometimes, assume one of us is going to have to write something down, right? So how would you articulate the test to be the link in the chain, recognizing that it's got to be something more than simply being the records that under C1 caused the re-adjudication, because that would merge C1 and C3. So how would we articulate that test?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the test, based on this case law, should be essentially you look at, is there a direct causal link between the service records and the grant? And then additionally, were the service records relevant, or did they speak in any way to proving, you know, one of the elements that led to the grant? So, you know, for example, if you look at cases where the Federal Circuit and this court have, you know, found C3 did not apply, such as Flores Vasquez, you know, in those cases, they found that C3 did not apply when the service records were not, you know, in any way relevant to the grant. And again, you know, C3 is written as a low standard in part. And, you know, Flores Vasquez suggests a low standard again, because the opposite presumably is true.
So, and this is all, this wasn't meant to be a trick question, because it's hard to articulate. It would be easy if what we could simply say was, well, the words based on, right? So that's what's in the regulation. Actually, based and on are separated by in whole or in part, but it's based on, right? And the Supreme Court's got a couple of cases that say generally the term based on, the phrase based on, means but for causation. Not always, but generally. And Spicer would seem to be in that line of cases. But by the same token, it's got to be something at least a little bit more than but for causation, because otherwise that merges C1 and C3.
Yes, and I do agree, Your Honor, and I think that's where it comes in, where, you know, that can be broken. Like I said, you know, there's case, like, just to give a hypothetical maybe would help, you know, say there was a case, you know, where service connection denied based on lack of an in-service injury. In the meantime, appellants granted service connection for a different injury of some kind. Case is reconsidered. But then, you know, as it's being reconsidered, appellant gives a statement, you know, this other injury I got service connected for 10 years after the initial decision contributes to this. It ends up getting a grant based on secondary during that development. That would break the chain of causation, since there's something independent that takes it kind of out of the realm. So I think in those cases, you know, even though C1 would apply, the reconsideration would apply if there was relevant evidence. That would not be one where C3 would apply. So, you know, the chain can be broken. Again, I think Flores Vasquez is a good example of that, where in that case, it was granted based on development that happened before the new service records were obtained. And again, that would break it, the chain, even though, you know, there had been, you know, reconsideration. You know, as long as there's something outside of it to break the chain, then it wouldn't apply. So I think it's a but-for cause inquiry based also in part on relevancy to a grant. So I think that, I think that is shown again by those cases I cited, as well as the Secretary's, you know, own interpretation in the Federal Register. I think the other thing that's important in this case is, you know, we know the decision also has to be broader than simply what's cited by the regional office or, you know, a VA examiner. You know, we know this because, you know, there is case law where service connection has been granted in the intermediary, you know, in cases such as Pacheco v. Gibson and Emerson v. McDonald. A case was service connection was denied. Intermediary, the case was reopened unrelated to new service records and granted. Then new service records were obtained and added to the record. And the court in those cases found, you know, remand was necessary to apply C3. So we know it's a broader inquiry than just why was service connected granted by the RO, because otherwise reconsideration would not be possible in those circumstances. It's also important to note, you know, if that is indeed controlling what the RO cites, then the board and court would essentially have no appellate review, because they would have to say, oh, the RO did not cite to these metals, therefore denial, which is really what happened in this case. You know, there's no dispute. These were the only new records. The court said, well, It wasn't cited by the RO, and they relied on the VA examination, so no C3. But we know from, you know, cases like wages that, you know, it's disfavored to interpret any regulation in a way that strips the board of its, you know, ability to be a, you know, body of review, because that would go against, you know, congressional intent to have them be an appellate body for, you know, all benefits claims. So, you know, the inquiry has to be broader than just what was cited in an RO decision. I think that's clear. And I think based on that, you know, the board clearly erred here because, again, we know 1991, service connection denied, but hearing loss was found. Then, you know, 30 years later, appellant submits these records showing direct combat exposure where he was exposed to, you know, live fire. Then the case was, you know, reconsidered, reopened. There was a VA examination. There was an RO decision. The grant was based in part on these records, which means that, or in part based on combat noise exposure, at least, which is evidenced by these records. You know, there's nothing breaking this chain. However, the only thing the board said was essentially, you know, they cited to his Purple Heart, they cited to some other evidence of combat, but not these specific ones showing these two instances of combat in 1968. However, you know, as discussed, there is, you know, clear law that development needs to be considered, which the board did not consider at all. And, you know, there is also clear evidence that, you know, or not clear evidence, but, you know, case law supporting the fact that, you know, these decisions have to be reviewable, at least in some ways, Your Honors.
So help me understand, why were the two additional records that were added in 2020 are relevant in view of the fact that the record shows that the appellant has a combat infantry badge, a CIB, a Purple Heart, and medical records that show he was exposed to explosions?
Yes, Your Honor. They are relevant because, you know, combat exposure to noise and an in-service injury had not been conceded in the 1991 regional office decision. The VA never made a favorable finding on that until the decision at issue in this case. Further, that's really an inquiry.
But you can't get a CIB unless you're in combat and you're an infantry person.
That's correct, Your Honor, but noise exposure itself was never specifically conceded, and these also show two specific instances of
but
combat
But it was
noise.
In the medical record, the explosion.
That's right, Your Honor. It was in the medical record. You know, no dispute with, you know, any of that. I would also point out that that's really a relevant inquiry to C1, which has already been conceded in this case. You know, per Kaiser, when you look at a C1 analysis, that's when you look at relevancy. Does it speak to an unestablished issue? That's a C1 inquiry, which has already been conceded in this case. So I don't think relevancy actually is, you know, at issue in terms of whether it's relevant to the claim overall.
So in 2020, when those two documents were added, Was the claim processed as a supplemental claim?
Yeah, it was a request to reopen, Your Honor.
And then what was the July 2020 submission?
July.
Was that a request for a supplement did he file a supplemental claim at that time?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor, where he submitted the evidence and asked to use it as evidence of his, you know, combat exposure to noise.
And just to button down something that was, and then I know Judge Jakewith has a question, button down something that we asked in a supplemental briefing order. I think I'm getting this right. The RO talked about new and relevant evidence, but the board talked about new and material evidence. Does that have any substantive effect on anything
I would say only to the extent that, you know, the board made a finding that it was material evidence that spoke to an unestablished term. But yeah, in general, I think the real key here is that the RO found reconsideration, which was a favorable finding, as did the board when they went, you know, right to the C3 analysis. So I think, you know, that's really controlling here. But in terms of, you know, persuasiveness of finding, you know, that it was new material evidence that, you know, means it's supposed to speak to an unestablished fact, I think it's relevant just in that regard, Your Honor.
Beyond closeness in time, is there any evidence linking the submission of the combat records with the ordering of the exam?
No, Your Honor. There's no specific evidence about, you know, why the VA decided to order an exam. The only thing I would say there is that, you know, we know this further development is supposed to be part of consideration. You know, for example, in George v. Shulkin, you know, the court held that reconsideration requires the development of evidence. You know, so, you know, logically, that could have been the cause. But to be honest, we don't know. And I don't think it's controlling here. You know, like I said, these cases have to have a standard where the board and the courts can review. It can't just be based on, you know, whatever, you know, inquiry was done at the VA that we don't know about. So, you know, while it certainly could have been based on reconsideration, we truly don't know why they ordered the exam, Your Honor.
Anything else? We saved your rebuttal time, Mr. Shulman, so
thanks. All right. Excellent. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thanks.
Good morning, Your Honors, Chief Judge, and may it please the court. Your Honors, the language of 3.156C3 requires some indication of substantive reliance on the newly submitted service department records, not just a mere chain of causation connecting the submission of those records to the ultimate award of benefits. The court should agree with our interpretation for two reasons. This is consistent with the common meaning of based on, which means to derive and rely on information from a specific source. And two, reading based all or in part as merely but for causation is inconsistent with the common meaning, would render the language of C3 meaningless, and would effectively collapse the distinction between C1 and C3. Here, there is no indication that the RO adjudicator or the examiner relied on any evidence contained in the newly submitted service department records. In fact, both cited as evidence of the in-service noise exposure, evidence that was already of record at the time of the earlier rating decision contained in appellant's DD-214. Reliance, whether or not there has been reliance on a newly submitted service department record is a factual question for the board. And it is not clearly erroneous for the board to have looked at the entire record and determined that the basis of the grant was the Purple Heart, the combat infantry badge, the positive nexus opinion, and the appellant's MOS. Any award made based all or in part on a service department records must mean that the decision maker relies on and uses information from the service department record in making the award. This is consistent with the common meaning of based on. Speaking to one of your questions in the supplemental brief,
Could
Your Honor.
Just jump in. So the Supreme Court in a case called Safeco, I don't know if you're familiar with that. This is a quote from the Supreme Court. It says, quote, the phrase based on indicates a but-for causal relationship.
Yes, Your Honor. And in those cases, the Supreme Court was discussing that but-for will always be a part of the based on inquiry, but it does require something additional to that, which in our case is substantive reliance on the information from that specific record.
So you've said that phrase to me twice, and it's me, not you. I don't know what you mean by substantive reliance. Is there reliance that is not substantive? Right. In other words, I don't know what the word substantive is doing there. And again, the reason I'm saying this is somebody will have to write this down so the board can apply it. And so if I said to my law clerk who's going to help me write this, okay, we're going to say substantive reliance, and she who's in the audience out there somewhere is going to look at me and say, what do you mean by that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Say, you have to tell me that, right? No, but really, you have to tell me that because I need to tell her that. So
the difference here kind of lies between the distinction between C1 and C3. C1 requires consideration. That means just looking at all the evidence that's available, which is all that is required under C1. C3 requires the award to be made based all or in part on the service department record. So it's about looking to see, well, what has been relied on? Is it used for the substance of what is the information from there, and is it used in the grant?
Do we have to be concerned a little bit before I was a judge, I was a law professor, and I always used to tell students that, you know, the reason that we have rules is to guard against the weasels in the world, right? And if there weren't weasels, we wouldn't need rules, right? And if you adopt a rule, as you've articulated, doesn't that allow a weasel to run with this? In other words, you've done the C1, and now what they do is they take this thing that got it reopened, and they say, we're going to put it to the side, and we are never going to refer to that thing again.
No, Your Honor.
Wait, wouldn't that be possible to happen?
It could be possible, Your Honor, but I believe that the interpretation that opposing counsel is positing here would be equally as available here, is that there just needs to be, it isn't a high bar for as opposing counsel and I agree on, it's not a high bar for reliance.
Listed out the citations, okay, and listed the combat infantry badge, the Purple Heart, and then the document or the citation that he submitted that was used as C1 reopening, right? And listed all three of them. Under your rule, that would be substantive reliance.
Yes, Your Honor.
So this is, I'm getting back to my thing, right? So then the RO person says, you know, listen, I don't want to be dinged by getting a whole big retroactive award here. So I'm going to list my two decorations and I'm going to put the other one to the side. And now magically then it doesn't support a C3. I mean, that's my concern about that level of rule, is it's really subject to manipulation, isn't it?
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's subject to manipulation, Your Honor. There is a certain level of subjectivity and discretion that is afforded to RO adjudicators and medical examiners in what they do and do not cite to, which is why it's not a hard-line rule that they must cite to this evidence. But I think what's particularly instructive here is the purpose of the regulation.
So if it's not a hard and fast, so I could live with the idea of this rule, even though I don't like the fact you just take the pen, you put it aside, and now we're going to pretend it doesn't exist. But if it's not then what the board seemed to do here, which is look at what the RO did and said this thing wasn't in the decision. So if it's something more than that, how do we articulate what that more is?
I think it's mostly instructive here is if we use more of a hypothetical. In certain cases, it's not always going to be true that the RO cites specific records. But if there's some indication that the information is there's lack of in-service injury, as highlighted in the Federal Register's example and explanation of this specific regulation, if the record provides VA with information that it doesn't have anywhere else, and then it makes sense that it would be substantively relied on because it provides VA with that information that it was missing at some point. But here we have the purpose of the regulation is maintained because the information that is provided by this record is functionally the same of what was provided, what was before the regional office at the time of the earlier rating decision. So the purpose of the regulation is to ensure that a veteran isn't disadvantaged due to lack of consideration of that specific record. And here we are both in agreement that they did get the advantage of having his claim reconsidered. But really the purpose here point here is that this record didn't substantively contribute to a material change that led to the grant. This is information that was already before the RO at the time of the earlier.
How is it so that the information that was submitted by the veteran is duplicative of the information in his DD-214?
How is it? Was it let in? Can you clarify your question, Your Honor?
What's the match there? Explain to me why VA is asserting that the agency already had that information in its DD-214.
The standard under C-1 is new and relevant. So that is a low standard, Your Honor. But the information, which is what it speaks to, which is the issue at here, which is the combat noise exposure, the VA already had that information at the time of the earlier rating decision. The basis for the denial in the earlier rating decision was lack of chronicity of hearing loss in service and did not manifest to a compensable degree within 1 year of leaving service. That's a very basic level of in-service injury that was not spoken to. But the point here...
So tell me about the evidence that VA already had. That's what I'm asking.
The information is contained in his DD-214. It had the evidence of his Purple Heart. It had the evidence of his combat infantry badge. As Judge Peach mentioned, you can't obtain the... Army commendation or the Army infantry badge, unless you're in service. This was never at issue.
It doesn't have to involve noise exposure. There's plenty of ways to kill people without making a lot of noise. It happens.
That may be true, Your Honor, but.
It happened a lot in Vietnam.
But the main point.
A combat infantry badge doesn't require that. It requires essentially being an infantryman and present in when your unit's engaged in combat. And a Purple Heart, get stabbed.
Yes, Your Honor. But
no, man, there's no information on the DD-214.
But that's
the Bronze Star's not there. The Army Commendation Medal doesn't have a V device. So you get Army Commendation Medals, lots of people do, from their work in courtrooms and offices and kitchens.
Yes, Your Honor, but the Purple Heart and the Combat Infantry Badge isn't all that was the basis for the grant of or for the positive nexus opinion. There was also a reference to the RPG explosion and treatment records from service that allowed us to see that there was an in-service injury. So it wasn't
one, but it wasn't enough, right? They said one injury. One finding that there was hearing loss, not good enough.
And to the extent that the appellant has the ability to challenge the earlier rating decision, because it is clear here that the grant was made based off of evidence that was already of record, and appellant has an avenue of recourse here found in Q. But changing...
If it's clear, the only reason it's clear, and this gets to Chief Judge Allen's weasel theory... is because that's what the RO said, not because that's what the evidence says. Because the evidence that the veteran submitted is absolutely the best evidence of that he was subject to sustained noise exposure in combat.
Yes, Your Honor. But at the end of the day, the plain language of the regulation says an award made based all or in part on the service department record, then you get the earlier effective date. If it was just supposed to be a but-for causation or it's just about what evidence is contained in the record, then the language of the regulation would be different. It would say an award made following the submission of the records or after, if an award is made at all, then they get the earlier effective date. But that's not the language of the regulation. We have to give meaning to all the words in a regulation. And here, based on part means to derive and rely on information from a specific source. And here, it was not clearly erroneous for the board to say, looking at the entire record, all that was relied on, or what was most clearly relied on, was the Purple Heart, the Combat Infantry Badge, the positive nexus opinion, and his MOS, all of which was evidence that was before the regional office at the time of the earlier rating decision.
The C&P examiner relied on the reported history of military noise exposure, and that's only present in the evidence that the veteran submitted.
No, Your Honor. It's also contained in the service department records from before the regional office, contained in his RPG blast and explosion. They knew that he did have an event in service. It just so happened that back in 1991, nearly 30 years ago, that was how the claim was adjudicated.
They ruled that one event wasn't enough. And so that's why the relevant evidence had to be considered.
I think that speaks to the fact that we have 30 years of case law and VA and understanding of medical knowledge and VA policies that have changed significantly since 1991 when the claim was originally decided, Your Honor.
It's pretty tough to believe that the best, most detailed, specific, officially verified evidence of the veteran's central role in combat twice involving heavy and intense concentration of weapons fire in a dense jungle prompted reconsideration of VA's 30-year denial of service connection, yet played no part in the resulting award. That screams pack of pieces.
Your Honor, if based on in part means anything that is reasonably exposed to in the record, then there would be no meaningful distinction between what is considered under C1 and what is relied on under C3.
So you've said a couple of times that if the RO had listed this new evidence in the decision, that that would have shown that it was based on it, but that you also said, but that's not necessary. In other words, it doesn't have to be that way. Let's assume we adopted that theme. Wouldn't we still need to send this back to the board? Because it seems like that's not what the board did, right? The board said this is what's in the RO decision.
No, Your Honor. What the we don't believe that there's a deficiency in reasons or bases in the board decision because the board made a finding of what was inherently relied on, and it is not. And in that sense, we can negatively infer that there was no reliance on the new service department records.
So let's assume this. Assume that we're changing the facts, right? That the RO here listed as part of just its decision, just listed the new evidence, the V device, okay? And then it gets to the board. Could the board say, well, it's listed in the decision, but we're not relying?
No, Your Honor, that we wouldn't expand it. We wouldn't expand it that far.
Why not? So if it's listed, the board is stuck with it. But if it's not listed, the board could still favor the veteran and say, but it really was relied on?
Yes, Your Honor. Specifically, if it's providing VA with information that it didn't already have, it would make sense that if it isn't cited in the regional office or the RO's decision, then it had to have contributed to the grant of service connection. But here we're dealing with information that VA already had. But
that's where we run sort of into a problem. Some of this was what Judge Jacob was talking to you about, but we're all either stuck with or benefited by, depending upon which side of the aisle you're on, the idea that VA treated this submission as new and relevant evidence. You keep saying VA had, right? But we're stuck with the fact that that's what they said. Even if I wanted to say that was wrong, I can't because that's a favorable determination.
Yes, Your Honor.
So once that is established, I'm just desperately trying to come up with how we articulate how it is then that this thing, which we have to treat as something VA didn't have, if it was, it wouldn't have qualified as new or material or new or relevant, depending on which decision you look at. And how do we say, beyond saying the RO didn't list it, that something is or isn't the reason in part or in whole that we had granted this benefit? I mean, how do we articulate that as a rule?
Your Honor, the Secretary posits that the rule should be that there is a causal chain, which is always going to be part of the but-for chain of causation will always be part of based of what it means to be based on part and some indication of reliance. That's
okay,
all
so,
we need.
So let's stick with the first part. And this is not critical, you right? I'm now trying to put myself in a board member's shoes, right? And they're going to say, what the heck are those people on the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims doing? Because they haven't given me a rule to apply, right? I feel like that with the Federal Circuit sometimes. I'll do what you want. Just tell me what you want me to do, right? So we know you started out by saying the but-for causation is always part of the analysis, but it will always be satisfied, right? Always. Because but-for the filing of the new evidence under C1, you'd never get to C3. So it does no work. Okay. So something else is doing work. This is the substantive reliance. Okay, I understand what you mean by that now. But how do we determine whether there's substantive reliance? Is it literally what they write down? Because then we're in the pack of weasels, right? Now, by the way, I do have to say for the record that my colleague talked about lots of ways to kill. I talked about cute little weasels. Back to business now. We need to articulate what it is. And it's okay if the rule is, if you need to look, you can look, right? It's okay if you want to articulate the rule as being, listen, it's formalistic, but we need to have a rule that we can apply. And the way we're going to do that is going to say, what did the RO cite in its decision? But if it's something different than that, then I need to have what that is.
The secretary says that posits that the standard should just be a clearly erroneous rule. Is it clearly erroneous for the board to have found what was relied on? There are factors that can go into that, such as looking at what was explicitly cited, but it doesn't always have to be explicit. It can be implicit reliance based off of the hypothetical I posed, where there is no indication anywhere in the record.
And it's review that we're talking about. When the board makes this determination, is it doing it? I would have thought the board does these things de novo. Subject to under the AMA being bound by certain factual findings, right? But is it that the board is actually engaging in a review to decide whether what the RO did was erroneous or not? Or is the board making this decision itself subject to maybe some inputs that have to be taken?
The board's obligation here is to review the record and to make a finding of what was relied on, Your Honor. And that finding...
What was relied on by the RO?
Generally, yes. It would go back to what the RO says, but it's about what is the basis for the grant of service connection.
And what if the board disagrees? So, right, because most of the time we don't think of the board as actually reviewing the RO in that sense, in the same way that we review the board, right? Because we think of the idea, as I understand it, is these are decisions of the secretary, which the secretary has then consigned to the board to make the final determination. So what the RO says usually isn't like binding on the board. Now, again, factual findings under the AMA, they are. But is it really that what we're telling the board in these situations that they need to do is they need to say, what did the RO do? And then make that call.
No, Your Honor. Again, that is just one factor to consider. It is they are reviewing the entire record, the face of the record, and determining what is the basis for the grant. And here it is not clearly erroneous for the board to have looked at what was specifically cited, because we have a very specific set of facts here in which we do have explicitly what was relied on as the basis for the grant of service connection. They specifically stated the positive nexus opinion, the Purple Heart, the MOS, and the combat infantry badge. That is not a clearly erroneous finding for the board to have made.
So could the board have said here, yeah, that's what the RO listed, but those were already, to go back to Judge Jake, but those things were already in the record earlier. So that couldn't have been the reason that this is coming out differently. So therefore, we're going to say, even though you didn't list the V device, that had to have been the back of your mind, Arra.
Possibly, Your Honor. But again, that speaks to the difference between consideration under C1 and reliance under C3. Again, if based on means anything you were exposed to, we're dealing with a set of information that's before the RO. The RO can rely on information, choose to rely on specific information, but when that information is the exact same functionally as stuff that was already before the RO at the time of the earlier rating decision, then it doesn't, it, the purpose of the regulation is maintained here. The appellant wasn't disadvantaged due to lack of consideration of this record. It most likely wouldn't have made a difference back at the time of the earlier rating decision. We're vitiating the finality of an earlier rating decision because it is based on this record. It's about the information that it provides VA with. And if VA already had the information of in-service
noise
exposure.
Well, we're not vitiating the finality of an earlier decision based on the record, right? Because you only get to based on when you get to C3. And by that point in time, you've already said we're re-adjudicating, right?
Reconsidering. Yes.
But you're doing it, right, because of that. And the based on language only becomes relevant when you get to C3.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, the plain language of the regulation says based all or in part on the service department record. And here it was not clearly erroneous for the board to have made that finding that there was no indication in the record that it was based on that record. It could have been based on information that is also supplied by that record, but that is the distinction that we're creating here, is that consideration, it's allowed to be considered because it is new and relevant. Whether or not it's actually relied on, which should be the definition under C3, under base, what based on part means, was not clearly erroneous here.
And what other factors, if we were going to give factors for the board to consider, what other factors besides what's in the RO rating decision would be on our list of factors?
We can also look back to see what evidence was already of record at the time, Your Honor. We can look at...
But doesn't that merge us back into C1?
Partially, Your Honor. There are multiple factors, including looking at what was specifically relied on. Meaning here, we can look at the... examination. And the examination also is one step back in the chain and saying, was there any reliance there? And again, here there is no indication of reliance in that for that instance either. It's looking at the face of the record and determining specifically, especially in cases where it's providing VA with completely new information.
What if the examiner had cited this, but then the RO didn't?
Then most likely the secretary would find that would be clearly erroneous because it was relied on for its substance for the grant. In fact, that's also what's specifically noted in the Federal Register's explanations of what is required under C3. In that instance, it is the VA is missing information of an in-service injury. We already knew that there was evidence of an in-service injury at the time of the earlier rating decision, but in the Federal Register's explanation, it says there was no evidence of an in-service injury at the time of the earlier rating decision. Then the new service department record comes in and provides VA with that information, and then it prompts development of an examination that relies on that information from that service department record showing here's the evidence of the in-service injury. Then in that instance, it would be that it was relied on for that information. But again, here we're dealing with a specific set of facts where the information is the same, and we're allowed to let records in for being new and relevant under C1. That's allowed.
So how do we figure out why, or how does one figure out why an exam was ordered sooner?
That's a great question, Your Honor. The
I was proud of it. I worked so hard.
You did. Prompting development is prompted by a review of the entire record. At the instance that the records come in under C1, VA is looking to determine whether or not the record is new and relevant to an appellant's claim. Once they decide that record is relevant to be let in, that prompts VA is required to review the record or the appellant's claim on the merits. And at that point, VA is determining whether or not there is enough information to adjudicate a claim, or whether or not there is more development needed. But the key question under C3 is what is evidence used in a grant? And the decision to obtain an examination is not evidence used in a grant.
Okay, so let's stop there, because now, you know, believe it or not, up till now, you both will find this hard to believe, but your views were actually consistent in a lot of sense, right? Which it's just, how do you describe what has happened in my view, in the spectrum? But here there's now like a clear break, right? So it's the secretary's view that even if we had, for example, say we had a rating specialist wrote a memo that said, I am ordering an exam because the record now has something it didn't have before, the V device, and that's the only reason I am ordering the exam is now it's past the tipping. Let's just assume that. As I understand it, the secretary, but everything else is the same. the secretary would say that doesn't qualify under C3.
No, Your Honor. I think that speaks to the other part, that is when the board is reviewing what has been relied on, that's one of the factors that it can look at. It can look that far back in the chain, as far back in the chain as it needs to from the point it's submitted.
So then I misunderstood what you said about the exam. It can be the fact that the thing that prompts VA to do the develop the exam could be the link in the chain that even if, and you tell me if I'm wrong, even if then the examiner, it's him or herself, didn't cite it, and the RO in the grant didn't cite it. Because earlier, we are able to say, this triggered the getting of the exam, which then led to the exam, which then led to the grant, and the only thing that referenced the V device was the request for an exam in my hypothetical.
Yes, in your hypothetical, that is, it's different from the facts we have here because that is explicitly noted. And again, we're getting back to the explicit versus implicitly noted, but here we have, it's not clearly erroneous for the board to have found that what was specifically cited was the basis.
See,
but again,
and that's the thing though, right? Even if we accept everything you've said, don't we still have to send it back because the board didn't go through all of this analysis? Even if we take the most restrictive view, right, which it seems from what the secretary says isn't that it must be written down, right? You're not saying that it must, that's a factor, right? But the board didn't do a factor analysis. It just said it wasn't written down.
No, Your Honor, we don't believe that this needs to be sent back for a statement of reasons or bases because at best it would be harmless error because the board found what was implicitly or what was explicitly and implicitly relied on in this case, and it is.
How do we know that the board found implicit?
I retract my earlier statement, Your Honor.
Right.
I mean
so
to say
because if you could have, I'm struggling with the same things you are, right? Which is, I think the board took, whether explicitly or implicitly, a position that the secretary isn't willing to defend, and I think probably correctly so because of my weasel example, don't worry, you can answer my question, which is if it's not written in the rating decision, you can't do it. I think that's the way the board approached it. And if that's right, then wouldn't we have to ask the board to do the implicit determination that you're asking?
No, Your Honor. The secretary stands on the point that what was explicitly noted is not clearly erroneous in this specific instance. We are dealing with facts where the RO and the examiner specifically cite what was relied on.
There's no way to get from there to here without relying on the new evidence because the RO in 1991 looked at the grenade explosion and said, that's injured but resolved, doesn't establish a chronicity for disability purposes. And now we have a medical examiner saying that sustained exposure to noise levels could have produced permanent damage, so it's service connected. But the only only evidence of that is the veterans' valorous conduct in multiple instances, subjecting him to sustained, concentrated explosions of many, many projectiles, not just one grenade.
No.
None of that's captured on his DD-214.
No, Your Honor, it is not captured in the DD-214. But this kind of speaks to the point that I was getting at earlier, which is that there has been 30 years of development in case law and medical understanding of bilateral hearing loss since the earlier rating decision. And one of the benefits of this system is that two different adjudicators can look at what is essentially the same pile of information and find differently. That's exemplified by the finding in Flores-Vasquez, in which in one instance they found that the medical examination was not sufficient. But in the later rating decision, after the submission of the service department records, it found that, well, no, that medical examination was, in fact, probative. The evidence can be, the grant can be made based off of evidence that is already of record. That's what's exemplified in Flores-Vasquez, Your Honor.
May 2020, the appellant submitted his claim and at that time put in his ARCOM with a V device and his Bronze Star with a V device. As I asked the appellant's attorney, was that claim processed then as a supplemental claim?
It was processed as a supplemental claim at during the July, after they requested the VA sent appellant a letter requesting him to file it on the proper form, Your Honor.
And then it seems like in thereafter, but before July 2023, there was a JMR that sent the case back. This court sent the case back so that the board could address the effect or what, if any, does C1 apply? Does it apply?
The language.
So that leads me to believe it was processed as a supplemental claim rather than as a claim under C1.
No, Your Honor. The language specifically cited in the regional office decision is that new and relevant evidence having been considered or having been received, your claim is now reconsidered, which implies that the reconsideration required under 3.156C was satisfied here. The effect of 1 and 3 is that any time VA receives a new service form record, they must reconsider the claim. And in that rating decision that we JMR'd, they only addressed Q. So that was why we sent it back, was to address the applicability of C in general.
In general. Not. But then when this the board talked about the C1 application, but it seemed like it was rote. It was just, we're going to address it because the court's going to make us address it. And then it seems like then the it reverted back to a supplemental claim with an effective date as of May 2020 when he submitted his.
The May 2020, are you talking about the decision on appeal, Your Honor? Because that
the
is,
decision
yes.
on appeal here was, yes. is a result of the board decision that was JMR'd back from us because they didn't analyze the applicability of C1.
Yes,
and now the board decision that we have before us that's being appealed did address C1, but sort of like as a, we have to do it because that's what the JMR said, so we'll do it, but we'll go back now, and it reverts. In my mind, it looked like it reverted back to a supplemental case and with an effective date as of 2020.
Yes, Your Honor. The effective date is correct in this case. It was appellant was afforded the originally was afforded the July 2020, and then he appealed it, and they found that he could get the May 2020. But in order to get an earlier effective date past that is how we get to C3, and they reverted to may I briefly conclude,
yes,
Your Honor?
You can.
Yes. They assigned the correct effective date because the board found that it was not the new service department record was not the basis of the grant, and therefore they would not get the earlier effective date.
I mean, isn't part of the confusion that's the procedural confusion here is that VA, and this is going to sound more critical than it is, but VA 3.156 says VA shall reconsider, right? But yet when these things come up, VA makes you file a supplemental claim form, which is, it just seems to me, it's not really a supplemental claim because the regulation says you shall reconsider. And so, I mean, isn't that really what's leading to this? I mean, do you think maybe out there's some sort of form that VA might be thinking about, like the 3.156C form or something?
No, Your Honor. It makes sense that it would be a supplemental claim because that is what's required under the AMA. But again, they're afforded the benefit of 3.156C1 when you do submit new and relevant service department records. So it was properly adjudicated as supplemental in part, but also because of the form it was filed on. But he did get the benefit of T1 getting his claim reconsidered as evidenced by the notation of new and relevant evidence. Your claim is now reconsidered. And the board also addressed whether or not the earlier effective date was warranted because C1 was met here.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Your Honors. We respectfully request you affirm the board.
Thank you. Mr. Shulman, I gave VA some additional time, and so you should feel free to use it if you need to, but nobody ever gets dinged by not using all their time, so.
Yes, Your Honor, I will try not to use all of it if I don't need to, but may it please the court, I think there's a few important things that kind of came up in that. The secretary several times referred to the records having to be substantially relied upon. And, you know, this is the secretary's regulation. If they wanted substantial reliance to be the standard, you know, that's how it should be written. It shouldn't say granted in part, which to me signifies a much lower standard. I also want to focus a little bit here just on the VA examination and the RO decision, because we're putting, or, you know, at least the secretary's position is we have to put great, great weight on whether they specifically mentioned these two records. But as we all know, you know, the VA examiner does not have a reasons or bases requirement as the board does, nor does the regional office. To get to kind of your, you know, weasel analogy, you know, I would not accuse the RO in this case, I'll be clear, of trying to be a weasel, but I will say, you know, in order for a case to be reconsidered, which the RO did find in its decision that it was reconsidered, you know, we know that to even make a reconsideration determination that required analysis of the newly submitted records even to find reconsideration, because that had to satisfy whether it was relevant for the grant. So this idea that because it wasn't cited, you know, these records weren't at all in the RO's head would go against the whole purpose of reconsideration, which is why, you know, I would maintain, Your Honors, that, you know, it has to be broader than just is this record specifically cited, you know, by the VA examiner or the RO. We have to look at, you know, this chain of development, which, you know, the secretary agrees with us on that, you know, this kind of but-for cause applies. And then you look at the relevance of the evidence to the grant of service connection.
What is your position on the issue that I was discussing with Spanx about what is the board doing in this context? Is it trying to figure out what the RO did when it granted, or is it saying, subject to the being bound by factual findings, the RO made favorable factual findings that aren't subject to Q, this is how I come out? Which one is that?
So I think, Your Honor, the board needs to review it on their own terms.
You meaning the question
of whether the claim was granted in part is, yes, a factual determination that the board needs to make. And, you know,
but that begs the question, is it saying it's a factual determination about what was the basis on which the RO granted the claim? Or is the board saying, what is the basis on which I am granting the claim?
So I think it might be a little bit of both, which I know is not maybe the strongest answer you wanted to hear, but I can take
yes and no together. We can touch with that.
I will explain what I would articulate the standard as, Your Honor, which I think you look at the causal chain, which is, okay, first, did this record prompt the development that led to the grant directly? Then you look at, is the evidence that was relevant in this newly associated service record, did that speak to a basis for the grant? Not the RO's basis for a grant, but, you know, in this case, evidence of an in-service injury or event. So you look at, is it speaking to and part of, you know, this eventual grant and causal chain? So that's why I think I said probably a few times in my opening, you know, there could be a break in this causal chain if something's granted for a completely different basis. You know, they brought up the example of Flores-Vasquez. In that case, there was a break. The VA examination occurred before the new evidence was associated and was based on a different in-service injury. It wasn't, an A to B to C. It was an A to B, Z, C. You know, there was something breaking that chain, and that's the distinctions, Your Honor. And I think that is what the board needs to look at in cases such as this.
So I'm sorry for beating this dead horse, but let me give you this analogy. When we walked into this room, right, I followed Judge Jaquith, and we walked through that door, okay? There are a lot of doors in this room, okay? On the way out, if I'm following Judge Peach, and Judge Peach says, that door doesn't have the right feng shui, and we're going to go out that and I follow her out that door, okay? We've reached the same exact point. That's all. But Judge Jaquith's way was different than Judge Peach's way. Okay? The RO, in my example, because he's the junior judge, is Judge Jaquith. Right? So the RO brings us through that door. Right? The board is Judge Peach. She brings us out that. We end up in the same place. Can the board do that?
Yes.
In other words, say it doesn't matter if it came in that door.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think it would be, you know, as I described, as long as there's this kind of clear link between, you know, the development that took place, which we know is part of the consideration in these claims, and as long as the underlying service records that were associated that weren't there before speak to the basis of the grant, which in this case they do. It was combat noise exposure. And, you know, as Judge Jaquith pointed out, these were the records that showed he went through both, you know, heavy enemy and friendly fire on two separate occasions a few months apart, where, you know, that's in part, again, I'll say again because I think it's important, is a very low standard. And, you know, if the secretary wanted a higher standard, you know, they are free to revise the regulation, but they wrote it with an in part based on standard, which is, in my reading and in a plain reading, you know, a very low standard to meet. I think in this case, the evidence clearly meets the in part standard for, you know, a veteran who was originally denied without a finding of an in-service injury, submitted records, which he specifically put a statement with them, please use this as evidence of my combat noise exposure. Then the case is reconsidered, reopened without any additional new evidence, no new theories, no new anything added to the record. He gets a favorable nexus opinion, which he never had. He gets a favorable RO decision in part due to combat noise exposure that just didn't list these specific two metals that show this combat. However, I think nobody in this courtroom would argue that, you know, these two exposures that were evidenced by these, you know, metals were, you know, quite significant. So I think, again, that clearly meets the low burden, you know, for in part. And that's all that is required by C3. You know, the secretary discussed a little bit, you know, the way they adjudicated hearing loss claims was a little different back then. But, you know, that's, you know, C3 is not a Q regulation. It's a little bit different. It doesn't look specifically at, you know, the law of the time or anything like that. You know, that's a Q rule. You know, C3 just looks at, you know, is this claim being granted in part because of these service connection records? That's the burden, you know, a veteran has to meet. And, you know, it makes sense because we don't want to punish veterans such as Mr. Reynolds when they didn't, you know, associate these records in the first instance, like happened here. And, you know, I'm happy to take any further questions, but, you know, otherwise, you know, I'm happy to rest.
And if you were writing this board decision and having found that these two records are relevant, how would the board decision then read to get to, what would be the rationale that you would like seeing in the board decision that gets you from that, those two submissions leading to and ending up with a effective date in 1990?
Yes, Your Honor. I would have the board decision right. In this case, appellant submitted new service records that were not previously associated with his record through no fault of his own. These records indicated two instances of in-service noise exposure in combat. When VA received these evidence, it led to the development of his case to include a VA examination that had a positive nexus opinion and then an RO decision that granted service connection for his bilateral hearing loss in part due to his combat noise exposure. As this development was prompted by the reconsideration of his claim and based on the combat noise exposure, which is evidenced by his newly associated records, C3 applies and service connection should be granted back to 1990, as the grant was in part based on these records.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shulman.
Thank you.
So in a moment, I'm going to submit the case, but this is a little different because we're in a room with hundreds of you. So what we're going to do is I'm going to say the case is submitted and Colonel Wagner will take us out of court session. But in the meantime, we're going to come down, we're going to shake counsel's hand, and then we're going to immediately come back up on the bench and we'll take your questions. Everybody on the same page, right? You all understand me. Excellent. Then the case just argued is submitted.
All right.